I recall a report that was issued or produced by the Dubai Future Council, and it clearly stated that UAE has not seen shortages of essential goods, such as food and medicine, of the scale experienced by countries in other regions. And is the report highlighted that this would be because to or due to the significant investment in multimodal facilities and infrastructure over many decades?
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, the number one podcast focusing on the digitization of supply chain. And I'm your host, Global Vice President at SAP, Tom Raftery.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Raftery with SAP, and with me on the show today, I have my two very special guests, Bashar and Haitham. Gentlemen, I hope, first of all, I've pronounced your names correctly, and second, would you mind introducing yourselves just to confirm that, maybe starting with Bashar first?
Thank you, Tom. This is Bashar Al-Johri. I'm a partner at PwC. I've been with the firm for just over 4 years. Prior to that, worked with other firms, and I was in the U.S. In the industry for quite some time. Here, I actually manage our procurement, supply chain, localization agenda for the region, and proud to be, or I'm happy to be on this call. Thank you.
Thank you, Bashar. Haitham.
Thank you, Tom. Haitham Khalifa here. I'm a director in BWC Middle East. I've been almost, it's been almost a year now with the firm. I basically run or manage all the SAP-related engagements and deployments in the Middle East. Anything that's related to the core SAP digital solutions, S/4HANA, Ariba, IBP, LBM, supply chain, more or less within the regions, all the region of the Middle East, all the countries. Thank you.
Superb. Now, we're here to talk a little bit today about procurement, for example. And Haitham, maybe you could start talking to us a little bit about that. You know, we've seen a massive shift globally in the last 12 months as a result, or more than 12 months at this point, as a result of COVID. How has that impacted on the whole procurement space?
There is a significant improvement, of course, transformation, I would say, that we're seeing in the Middle East. Let me start by a small example of all of us have seen how the world supply chains were exposed earlier this year or last year, you know, with media reports showing the empty shelves in the supermarket as the COVID-19 rolled in. And again, with the second wave sweeping Europe, some supermarkets in the UK have started restricting how much customers can buy to ward off another stock crisis, right? However, here in the Middle East, the problem of balancing supply and demand was less common, as the shelves have remained full, right? And the goods have continued to flow freely. So what exactly did we do in the Middle East that was right? And the answer to that is basically investing in the in digital technology, in supply chain technology. So, Tom, I recall a report that was issued or produced by the Dubai Future Council, and it clearly stated that UAE has not seen shortages of essential goods, such as food and medicine, of the scale experienced by countries in other regions.
Okay.
And is the report highlighted that this would be because to or due to the significant investment in multimodal facilities and infrastructure over many decades? So we've been seeing or noticing a significant shift over the last, it's not just year, but over the last 5 or 10 years, in the supply chain. A couple of examples in Saudi Arabia right now, all the supply chain or all the official governmental contracts usually have to go through Etmad platform, which is a government ecosystem for tendering and sourcing and supply chain. Okay. And we're seeing a same direction happening here in UAE, happening in Qatar, and most of the Middle East countries on more or less digitizing the overall governmental supply chain ecosystem. Recently as well, Saudi Arabia have launched a planned project for e-invoicing as well to automate all the governmental invoices through a unified governmental platform. This is just a couple of examples to showcase how the government is moving towards digital technology. But if you want to speak specifically on the supply chain, I would say the Middle East have an innovative approach to technology that really established the Middle East as a supply chain pioneer. So in the middle of the pandemic, one of the global supply chain leaders based in Dubai, they managed to accelerate the rollout of blockchain-powered digital container logistics platform to replace many of their manual, time-consuming, you know, administrative tasks that can typically slow supply chain down and cause inaccuracies. So in a time of a systematic shock, you know, this inefficiencies cannot be really underestimated. Many of the other things that we have done as well, along with the pandemic, is the investment of the back-end advanced ERP systems, joined with business intelligence. This enables or allows much of the real-time capabilities to be visualized and allows us to manage the ever-precious supply chain, challenges. So this is something more or less of a quick high-level overview, Tom, on the trends that we're currently following or going in the Middle East in terms of digital supply chain technologies.
Sure, appreciate it, Haitham. And Bashar, any additional comments to add?
Yeah, I would like to probably add a few things. If you look at what were the top three priorities before the pandemic, a lot of companies were focused on cost efficiencies, cost reductions as a key driver, which drives also the globalization agenda, where your suppliers are, how you source them, and so on. And digital transformation was just starting. I mean, not just started, but it was really one of the top three. All that changed after the pandemic, with about 60-some companies we surveyed, 60% of the companies we surveyed, is that they shifted risk management to be the top priority. Cost reduction is still part of it. And they accelerated the digital transformation. So unlike what everybody thought it would happen, that they will reprioritize or take away from the digitization, it did totally the opposite. And the reason for that, it drove the fact that I need to be more accurate in my demand planning. I need to be more accurate now in my what I'm getting through my logistics and so on, just because of the pandemic showing me where are my bottlenecks and where are my issues. And I want to make sure now with big data that I can really be a bit more proactive, more predictive of where the issues will be and how can I address them. And I think this is really an interesting trend that was counterintuitive, that we will move more and more towards digital transformation investments.
Interesting. And do you think that this trend will keep going, or will people back off once things start to settle back down? I mean, personally, I suspect that we're going to get more shocks like this to the system as things like climate change increase. So, but you know, that's just my personal opinion. What are you seeing out there?
We'll be right back.
Elevate your brand with the Sustainable Supply Chain Podcast, the exclusive voice in supply chain sustainability. Last year, this podcast's episode were downloaded 113,000 times by senior executives across the world, with listeners concentrated in the EU, North America, and Asia. Become a sponsor. Lead the conversation. Contact me for sponsorship opportunities and turn downloads into dialogues. Act today. Influence the future.
What everybody is looking at now is saying it's not a black swan anymore. Those types of pandemics, or if it's natural disasters, if it's political situations, whatever it is, it's going to be repeating. It's not going to be one-off. Mm-hmm. And it's really a matter of putting the foundation now rather than getting caught cold later on. As a matter of fact, when we looked at some of the investments that companies are making or putting forward, it has been actually growing, not declining. So if you look at just before the pandemic, about 36 or so, a third of the transactions and procurement and so on were automated or digitized. As we look at 2020, during the pandemic and just after the pandemic, that has gone up to 49%. So it shows that there is a continuous investment in digitizing and automation. And I think that will only continue to happen. There are also moving a bit away from just purely transactional into getting into more value add, eventually activities where you're using artificial intelligence to help with the decision making and supporting the category managers and so on. So I see it growing. I don't see it actually going down.
Okay, fantastic. And you mentioned in our prep call a term, procurement 4.0, which may be something that you're used to hearing a lot, but it was a new term to me. So presumably it's a new term to some of the people listening to the podcast consequently as well. Would you mind explaining what you think procurement 4.0 is, first of all, and then talking a little bit about more about that?
Yes. As we speak about, if we even start with the industry 4.0 and the revolution of what 5G is going to get us also, and the amount of data, the 3D printing, all of these elements, procurement will have to also adapt and be part of it. And what we are looking at is really how you can fully integrate your technological ecosystem, how you can actually use the market data, the analysis that comes from retail, let's say, to really drive what you're going to procure eventually. So you're taking massive or big data, analyzing it in order to look for trends that can support eventually not just your procurement, but your manufacturing, feeding into your manufacturing as well. This kind of mass analysis or analytics is really new to us, and we are becoming capable of doing it. One, for the availability of technology that can do that, and now with the enablement of 5G, we'll be even more capable of doing that. And I think maybe Haytham can even add on some of the advancements that they see in technology.
Definitely, Bashar. So we're seeing recently the fact that most of the ERP solutions or the supply chain solutions are now available on the cloud. The high speeds available by 5G and the, let's say, the breadth and depth of technological solutions and enabled it to go down deep down into each and every, let's say, functional aspects within the supply chain process. So we now have a fully capable cloud solutions that can go in depth into not just extended warehouse management, but into yard logistics applications as well, transport management applications as well. And all of that is seamlessly integrated with the back-end ERP system. Not just on the operational supply chain level as well, but on the planning side as well. So we have IBP, logistics business network applications that can enable an enterprise to visualize the entire supply chain network in real time across the world, identify the potential bottlenecks in each and every step along the way. So let's put it this way. Right now, you have the capability of, in real time, identify whether it is better for me if I'm manufacturing a certain product in, let's say, in Dubai, and I'm procuring the components in from China. Would it be better for me to get this product ship it through a freight, for instance, from Japan or from China straight to Dubai? Or would it make more sense if I can ship it by train from, let's say, from Russia all the way to Europe and then store it for a couple of weeks in Germany and then ship it by train to a port in Spain, for instance, and then ship it to Dubai? So in real time, you can factor all the current ever-changing costs of the storage fees, transportation fees, even labor costs as well can be factored into consideration. And it can give you a weightage of how much time would it take and how much effort would it take, and accordingly take the decision or recommend the decision on your behalf.
Yeah.
So all of this is now happening in real time on the cloud without the need of investing millions of dollars in an infrastructure, an extremely expensive infrastructure that you have to maintain regularly.
And Tom, if I may add, if you would allow
sure,
me.
Sure.
All of this technology cannot really happen without the addition of people's capabilities. So we really need to upskill the people to really be able to manage such type of technology, to really interpret it, to really use it for the decision making, and so on and so forth. So I want to just highlight there is a softer side as well that needs to go with the technology, and it's just not purely technology driven.
There always is, isn't there?
Yes, absolutely.
Where are we on the kind of adoption curve of this?
Well, if we look at where we are in the Middle East, the advantage we have, it's young countries in a sense of they are eager now to catch up to where the rest of the world is, or even to get ahead of it. And I think the adoption started, and I think Haytham gave examples, not only in the private sector, but also in the government sector, that they are trying to move further down the, or up the, I should say, the maturity curve to really adopt more digital solutions. And we can give a lot of different examples. I'll just give a quick one here for the sake of during the pandemic. One of the key problems was, as you are aware, the protective equipment, personal protective equipment, became an issue.
Yeah.
A company in the UAE, they started using 3D printing to really develop visors for the medical staff. So that's really leveraging technology as an example of really feeding or helping a situation like this one. We saw similar examples of leveraging technology in the region. A good and again recent example of that was if you look at the Chinese vaccine, for example. While it was developed originally in China, a lot of the testing happened also in the UAE, and then the UAE decided they adapted technology and brought it here as well. And this is what I mean. It's very dynamic region that has been that's really catching up to the rest of the world.
Okay, superb. For organizations that you know are listening to this and are interested in rolling out some more procurement 4.0 technologies or processes, you know, what would be kind of first steps for them?
This is an interesting question. At least I'll get started, and maybe I'll let Haytham if he wants to add.
Sure.
The first thing is really to have a clear objective of why you want to do it. Rather than jumping on the technology, starting first with what is the problem I'm trying to solve or why I need it, and then start looking where I'm buying it from, how clean is my data, and so on. So that's our first building block, to have proper data, or I have to create that data I need. Number two, what is my operating model for really that I want to go forward? How I'm going to structure my organization to really address what I need from procurement 4.0. For example, I may need more data analysts on it, or data mining individuals on it, in my organization. And how I'm going to link that organization to either manufacturing, or if it's services, then the services I provide. And then finally, the point that I mentioned a bit earlier, building the right capabilities for the people or the individuals who are going to be using this technology, and so on. So there are really, these are some of the building blocks that I see are important to start adapting. Now, there are other success factors, which is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But at least that will be my starting point if I am to advise.
Okay, and Haytham?
Same. So as Bashar highlighted or focused on the organizational empowering its team and the staff, and making sure that they are capable of doing the job, the internal capabilities of the infrastructure or IT infrastructure within the organization matters a lot as well. So initially, they need to make sure that they have the backbone ERP that is actually working, that's actually collecting the right data, and all the supporting necessary, components needed. For instance, IoT. You might need, especially when it comes to large shipping companies, IoT plays a huge role in collecting valuable information that can eventually help them in deciding or taking important decisions in the future. On top of the ERP and IoT and additional machine learning, let's say, components needed, then comes the supply chain part. So there are certain components, definitely, that helps them with the demand planning and demand management on the upstream level. But there are also additional components that can focus more on the downstream operational and execution, let's say, parts. And like we highlighted earlier, transport management, yard logistics, etc. So ultimately, the organization need to make sure that they currently have the proper framework set in place to have the right information and accordingly start building up from up down. So basically from the upstream onto the demand planning aspect and then go down all the way. And there are lots of components available right now in the market that can help in both of these areas.
Okay, superb. In other podcasts on these kind of topics, people have referred to the kind of trend of going away from globalization to localization. Is that something that's happening in the Middle East as well, or is that a global thing or regional? Or
this is a very interesting question. The pandemic has been really the catalyst for this localization. As a matter of fact, the best way to address the bottlenecks in the supply chain is to have the shortest possible supply chain, which is next to you if possible. However, there is also an advantage of having a global organization and a global network, because they bring the scale, they bring the efficiencies, they bring and so on. So now what's trending or started to merge is how I can get the benefits of a localization with the benefit of a globalization and put them together. And it's now the new trend is globalization. It's basically taking the efficiency as a hybrid model, where I take the efficiency of a global company and I customize, or I have a footprint for manufacturing or services closer to my customers or client base. If I may give a quick example of that,
sure.
I can be a manufacturer of tractors, let's say. I was a part of a company that used to make manufacture tractors. We were having difficulties selling it in one of the other countries. It was in India, actually. Then we discovered it was designed for us in the US. It was not designed for our customers in India. It was a funny example, but it's a true example. People use it for transportation as well. So they need to sit on the fenders. Our fenders are made out of plastic. They needed them to be fabricated out of steel in order for them to sit on it. So our tractor was not attractive. As an example of a simple thing, there were 28 features we discovered that we were pushing to the market in a global way, but it was not matching what the local customers wanted from us. And eventually we changed that footprint, we created a facility there, and we started customizing to the clients or to the customers in that region.
Superb. And Haitham, anything to add to that?
More or less, this is what we do as well. So when it comes to the back-end and software or digitization, we do have a global template usually that have the best practices per industries. Right. And on top of that, we always add the localization flavor, which is more or less statutory requirements or legal, let's say, mandates that have to be met in certain areas. Usually it's mostly financials, but there are as well in the supply chain, in lots of cases, certain tweaks or amendments. So we do have this flavor, definitely. This is something that we maintain as we go along. And especially in the Middle East now, there are multiple, let's say, regions. So in Saudi Arabia, there are certain rules when it comes to, let's say, tendering, right, for ATMED, integration with the governmental ecosystem, different rules, certain areas as well as UAE, as Qatar. So we factor all of that into consideration, the solutions that we deploy.
Okay, tremendous. Gentlemen, we're coming towards the end of the podcast now. Is there any question I have not asked you that you kind of wish I had, or any topic that we've not touched on that you think it's important for people to be aware of?
I will probably, it's not a question, but it's more of added to the comments so far.
Okay.
Change management is another key success factor that gets ignored usually when companies move into new technologies and digitizing their operations. It is really important to take the stakeholders, the employees, the beneficiaries of this technology with you through this journey, through proper communication, proper training, and so on, to get them to where you want to go. A technology that does not have proper change management actually can fail miserably. And this is really one of the items that I've seen failures happen, because the people, the change management side, the softer side, has not been managed properly. And this is really something I just wanted to add as we conclude our podcast. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point, Bashar. I've said many times in this podcast that changing technology is easy. Changing people is a lot harder.
Absolutely.
Hi, there any last comments from yourself? Any topics we've not touched on?
No, that would be all, Tom. Thank you a lot. Thanks a lot, Bashar and Tom.
Superb. If people want to know more about either yourselves, Bashar and Haitham, or PwC, or Procurement 4.0, or any of the other topics we've discussed today, where would you have me direct them?
Oh, we will send you a link that you can put on your podcast that will make it easier for them to find us or find relevant topics to this one.
Brilliant. Okay. Superb, gentlemen. That's been great. Thanks a million for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay. We've come to the end of the show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital supply chain or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application of choice to get new episodes as soon as they're published. Also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.